Welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano in for Rachel Nichols today, joined by two dynamic basketball minds, the legendary Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen and worldwide Momo Ramona Shelburne, ESPN NBA insider. So, ladies, we have some very spicy topics to get into today, and we'll start right here in Los Angeles, where Momo and I are. So, according to our very own Zach Lowe, numerous general managers and coaches from around the league say that they would draft one LeBron Raymond James, number one, in a winner-take-all game. By the way, LeBron is 36 years old, coming off a year where he averaged 25 points per game, 7.7 rebounds, and 7.8 assists per game last season. So, Ramona, I'll start with you. If you had your top overall pick in a winner-take-all game, basically the storyline of Space Jam, which we saw LeBron in, who would you take?
LeBron. LeBron, like, until he falls off the mountain as the king, I'm going with him. I know last year he was hurt, but we still saw probably 70% LeBron James in that play-in game against Steph Curry win the game. I mean, look at the shot right over Steph. There it is. Winner take all.
Yep.
I mean, you don't choose LeBron just because of how good he is individually. You choose him because of how good he makes his teammates and how well he sees the game. Kevin Durant is right there, so close, right one level below, but I guess maybe just the length of his shoe.
Length
of his shoe behind LeBron?
That's too soon, I think, still. Too soon, still. Jackie, what do you think?
Yeah. Wow, a lot of L.A. love going around on this panel today, Momo. And listen, if someone said to me, we just drew straws, you got LeBron, I wouldn't be unhappy. I would like my chances for all the reasons Momona just stated. But if you're telling me about one game at this moment, on this day, give me Kevin Durant, who I do not believe is a notch below and just proved it in Tokyo. He's also 3 or 4 years younger than LeBron and has a little more tools at this point of his career. He's in the prime of his career. He can kill you so many different ways on the offensive end with that size, with that quickness, with that three-point shooting. Give me Durant, but you know what? If you want to saddle me with LeBron, I'm good with it. Trust me.
You know what, Jackie? I'm with you. If I'm playing in a game against either one of you and one of you took Durant and I'm getting LeBron or vice versa, I'm good with that. Now, I do think I'm with Ramona here. If I had my druthers, if I had the number one overall pick, I would still take LeBron because for as unbelievable as Kevin Durant is, and I think he's the best scorer in the NBA. We saw what he did in the Olympics. He dragged us across the finish line at the Olympics. I still think LeBron makes the guys around him a little more viable, right? I still think that he has a slight edge in that particular regard. So, slight edge to LeBron, but I'm good with either one.
If I need one bucket, I'll go with KD.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that for sure.
Fair.
All right, sticking with LeBron.
LA spin, people. LA spin. But continue.
All right, sticking with LeBron, he's got a new running mate in Russell Westbrook. I don't know if you've heard that already. The explosive point guard was traded to his hometown here in Los Angeles on last month, basically during the draft and whatnot here. So, let me ask you this. A lot of overhaul going on in L.A., Ramona. Pretty much a complete turnaround from last year's roster after the exit to the Phoenix Suns. You cover the Lakers as closely as anyone. How does Russ fit with LeBron and AD?
So the Lakers' impetus for this move is they looked at their 2020 team and said, you know what we really missed is a secondary playmaker to LeBron, the guy like Playoff Rondo. And I say Playoff Rondo, not Rajon Rondo, because Playoff Rondo is the version they have in their mind. Now, Russ actually does a lot more than Playoff Rondo did. He can get up and down the court. He can create. He can score himself. He's not probably in the same category as a shooter, but they envision him as a guy that runs next to LeBron, can take secondary playmaker. But, George, I actually think it reminds me a bit of how they set up the offense in Cleveland and in Miami when LeBron played with Kyrie Irving and LeBron playing with Dwayne Wade, where essentially you have two secondary playmakers. The key is they have to see themselves as secondary playmakers. In any other team, Kyrie Irving, Dwayne Wade are primary playmakers. Russell Westbrook has been a primary playmaker in every team he's been on. And so I see visions of him being able to set the offense the way Rondo does, of him being able to create offense and take pressure off LeBron. But I think initially they're going to have to stagger his minutes while he learns how to play off the ball and be the quote-unquote secondary playmaker to LeBron.
All right. Now, welcome in our audience here on ESPN News, joining us here now. So, Jackie, how do you feel Russell fits with LeBron and AD?
Well, Ramona, you mentioned the past iterations of LeBron, and you mentioned Dwayne Wade and Kyrie Irving, two very glaring differences between them and Russell Westbrook. those guys can shoot, and Russell Westbrook cannot from the perimeter. And I think that's one of the problems with this deal. I would have gone with a spacer like Buddy Hield instead of Russ. But Russ Westbrook is here. You obviously can't question his motor. You can't question his motivation. And I think he's at a point in his career that maybe he can be the way James Harden was with the Nets, George. Well, he says, okay, maybe I played a different way my entire career. I'm going to learn to play differently here. Now, the biggest advantage I see for the Lakers with Russell Westbrook is this. George, you and I talked about it in the past. LeBron on the court, off the court. The offensive numbers plummeted for the Lakers. You now have someone you can put on the court that will help you score when LeBron sits. The problem I have is, when he isn't sitting, do you want Russell Westbrook to have the ball all the time? Because that's when he's at his best, when he's dominating the ball. The more you give him the ball, the less LeBron has it.
No question, Jackie. And real quick, I want to sign off here on ESPN2. I mentioned earlier that the folks on ESPN News had joined us. We will be now moving over to ESPN News. So, again, if you want to continue watching The Jump, please move over to ESPN News right now. So, Jackie, you had mentioned that the numbers plummet when LeBron is off the floor, and that's absolutely the case. When LeBron was on the floor last season for the Los Angeles Lakers, they were the number two ranked offense in the NBA. Whether that was whether he was just sitting or he didn't play in a particular game, it then dropped to 28th in the league. So that's a pretty big gap, okay? That's basically almost first to worst in that situation. So to both your points, I do think Russell helps there. I think that Momo may be right where you stagger those minutes a little bit. But at the end of the day, and at the end of every game, they're going to have to figure out how to play together. And maybe they do need David Fizdale to go through that old Miami playbook to figure out how to make Russell Westbrook play similarly to Dwayne Wade at a somewhat similar stage of their career. All right, moving on to one of the more intriguing storylines of the NBA offseason. What will the Sixers do with Ben Simmons? Well, according to Zach Lowe and Stephen A. Smith, the Warriors are internally divided on trading for Ben Simmons. So, Jackie, the topic of Simmons joining the Warriors has heated up lately, but should they pull the trigger and actually make the deal for Ben?
This is such an interesting decision to me, and I don't know how viable it really will be when it's all said and done, because I think Daryl Morey's going to hold out for Dame Lillard, if, in fact, Dame Lillard ever decides he wants to move on. I'm a fan of Ben Simmons. I did a story with him a couple years ago. I watched him in a gym, and I watched him shoot three-pointers. I watched him shoot perimeter jumpers. I really believe he can do it. I think right now, if he wanted to be, he could be a 34% three-point shooter. And by the way, that's not fantastic, but there's a lot of guys that shoot worse than that in this league right now. So it's all, what has he done in this offseason to get himself mentally prepared to take that step and shoot that shot? The problem the Warriors would have, if you have Ben as a non-shooter and you have Draymond Green as a non-shooter, then you've got problems at the end of a game. But if I'm Steph Curry, I'm encouraging my team to do this now. The young players are nice, but Steph has a window, Klay has a window, Draymond has a window. Capitalize on it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jack. I mean, internally, I know this is a, this reminds me a bit of when the Warriors had to decide whether they wanted to keep Klay Thompson for Kevin Love. Remember going way back in Warriors history?
Allegedly, Jerry West was the one who intervened.
Several of them. Steve Kerr, Alvin Gentry, all of them said, you know, if they trade Klay Thompson, their backcourt becomes Steph Curry and Kevin Martin, which who's going to guard anyone in that backcourt, okay? You need Klay Thompson to complement Steph Curry because he's a great defender and a great shooter. And as Jackie pointed out, if you have Draymond Green and Ben Simmons, who are quote unquote, it sounds insulting to call somebody a non-shooter, but in terms of how a defense guards you, the defense are going to sag off both of them. They're going to be daring them to shoot, which means there's five defenders out there to stop Klay, Steph, and whoever they have it, who have probably Iguodala in the closing lineup. So That's five defenders on three offensive players. It's not a good closing lineup, but Ben Simmons has that kind of talent. And when you're in the Warriors position right now, you have to look at what you have versus what you can get. Can they get Bradley Beal eventually? If they think they have a realistic shot at Bradley Beal, I like that fit better. But in terms of Ben Simmons' ceiling and what he can do for that team as a defender, and also maybe you slide him into more of a power forward position. He becomes more of a role guy, and he doesn't have to a role to the basket guy. And you take a lot of pressure off him offensively. So it doesn't even become, hey, will he shoot threes or not? It becomes cut to the basket because you're going to be wide open all day with Steph and Klay out on the perimeter.
Listen, we know Ben has amazing handles, right? Like, I don't think anyone is debating that part of it. But to your point, Momo, I think that one of the issues that maybe Philly has run into is they don't have someone they can trust to handle the ball where they can get Ben those easy looks, right? Ben is having to make plays, even for himself, from 23 feet yeah. away from the basket, and you can't consistently do that without a consistent jump shot. Now, I do think that the Warriors should do this for all the reasons that you guys outlined, because the timeline is there. You're talking about three stars above 30. You figure out the closing lineup, right? Like, if you need to add a shooter into that mix, I mean, you already have two of the greatest of all time. But if you need a third for some reason, I think you can make that work. I also think that opens up the floor for Ben for sure. Now, my question to you, and Ramona, I'll ask you first.
Yeah.
How does a trade with Golden State help Philadelphia right now, who has championship aspirations?
Yeah, flat out it doesn't. And I think that this works more for Philadelphia if there's another team that would prefer what Golden State can offer, okay? Another team, I don't know, like the Wizards with Bradley Beal? I mean, my understanding, you know, when the Sixers have talked about, in just in theory of whether or not Ben Simmons trades, Washington doesn't necessarily have an interest in Ben Simmons. Like, you have to have somebody who wants Ben. So if you have somebody who wants Ben, i.e. the Warriors, if they end up deciding that makes sense for their team, then the package the Warriors send doesn't necessarily go to Philly. I don't think the package of young players and Andrew Wiggins helps Philly at all. And Philly is in a state where they feel like they need to win now. This is Joel Embiid in his prime. You can't necessarily reload with draft picks.
All right, it's time to run it back.
Sure.
Let's do it. Here we go. 2012. A little up and under here from our man J.R. Smith.
Jeez.
You know, he's playing golf soon. So we figured, why not? If we're going to do this golf story about him, we might as well show people what he's got. Number four, a 360 layup in San Antonio. Oh, hello. Hello, Denver, JR. Sixth man of the year, JR.
Right. That is so hard. I would just get lost. How do you even know where the basket is at that point?
You know, you forget about Denver, JR. He played there as long as he played in Cleveland.
Oh,
you know,
hello.
He's really good there.
The Garden was getting down there. Look at Carmelo excited there. Back door.
Mello, I love Mello there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that oop was not really an alley. It was just pretty low.
Number two, a 360
I'm not sure alley. This has to do with golf, but.
Here he is. 360 in game. Good Lord.
You know what he did? That's like a receiver favorite. Who just cleans up the pass with the quarterback.
Yeah, by the way, nice pass from Chauncey, though.
A little behind him, though. That's why he has to turn.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Chauncey put it on the money. I think JR just wanted to do that.
Nuggets.
Yeah. Here he is again. Oh. Posterizing Gary Neal.
Whoa.
Hello. J.R. Smith in Denver.
What's the reaction here?
Yeah. In Denver, he was amazing. We forget about this.
He was. He got lost in the sauce, you know?
Yeah.
Got lost in the sauce.
All right, welcome back to The Jump. We're not lost in the sauce. I'm George Sedano here with Jackie McMullen and Ramona Shelburne. So J.R. Smith, yes, you just saw him in our Run It Back. 35 years old. J.R. is enrolling at North Carolina A&T State University to pursue a degree in liberal studies and to play golf. Smith is waiting on the NCAA right now to sort out his eligibility. And yesterday, Smith talked about why he decided to go back to school. Let's take a listen.
Just try to educate myself, do something after basketball. They always told me I could go back whenever, when I was coming out of high school, so this is whenever for me. All of the game is pretty much on my own hands, and I don't have to, you know, worry about teammates to pass the ball to and getting receiving passes and playing defense, so I can just play my game and, just have fun.
That's awesome. That's great. So, Jackie, what's your reaction to J.R. Smith going back to school and to play some golf?
So, a couple of things. I love that J.R. Smith is going back to school, and I love Ray Allen was the one that told him to do that. I love it when these guys go back and get their degrees. I'm not thrilled with him playing golf, because if he's on this team, he's taking the spot of an 18, 19-year-old kid who may never progress beyond this athletically. So give those opportunities to the young fellas. And three, please do not tell me that J.R. Smith is getting a golf scholarship, because my head will explode, okay? I hope he's just doing this on his own dime.
You know, J.R. Smith is one of the best athletes ever in the NBA. I mean, he was legitimately good at baseball, at football, at golf, at basketball. He just so happened to be a lottery pick in basketball. But he's legitimately good at all of those other sports. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that he would go into a different sport now. Golf, I think when you're in your late 30s, that feels like a good move rather than playing college baseball or trying to go in the minor league. So I like that. I like that he's going to get his degree. And, Jack, I'd be shocked if he took a scholarship away.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to pay his own way, Jack. I think he can afford it.
I just want to be sure.
Yeah. Now, the spot, though, is an interesting point. I do think that that's fascinating. Yeah. Look, and maybe JR could just kind of hang out and practice with them. Maybe he doesn't actually play and take up a roster spot. That would be cool. And maybe get in on some amateur stuff. There's plenty of amateur golf stuff around the country as well. All right, coming up, there Chauncey Billups, who we saw make one of those cool passes to J.R. Smith, has bold plans for the Blazers offense, and it doesn't include shooting a lot of threes. So will Dame be thrilled about that? We'll get to that in just a second. Stick around. You're watching The Jump. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano here with Jackie McMullen and Ramona Shelburne. Twitter's popping. Let's go. Speaking of the Blazers there, you saw Dame apparently just responded to a Twitter user who tweeted at him, how much y'all want to bet that before the NBA season starts, the Lakers still get Damian Lillard? Dame tweeted back, bet a million. Now listen, okay, I don't know, unless there's some new salary cap I'm not familiar with, I don't feel like that's even possible, but Ramona Shelburne, you know this league and the salary cap and this Lakers team as well as anyone. It seems like Dame is just messing with us here.
Yeah, you know, I actually kind of like that Dame's messing with us. It sort of reminds me of like when we get aggregated poorly and we snap back every once in a while. I think he's sort of tired of people just using him and his discussion for their own fun out there on Twitter. So it just felt like Dame was just cracking a joke.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get to Dame's new head coach, Chauncey Billups, who has some bold plans for Portland's offense. The Blazers' dynamic backcourt is known, obviously, for their three-point prowess. But Billups told Jay Allen of Rip City Radio, quote, I'm not one of those coaches that wants to shoot all threes and get up 50 threes. I don't believe in that. So, Jackie, I'll start with you. It seems like it could be interesting. Do you believe Chauncey's offensive philosophy, if that's the case, will work in Portland?
I do, because I think you could take this a whole bunch of ways, and here's how I take it. Portland was 29th in the league, George, in assists last year. Only the New York Knicks passed the ball around a little more. He wants more ball movement. That's what he should want. What Portland did last year is they were second in three-point attempts behind Utah. Where did it get them? He's not telling Dame Lillard, I guarantee you, hey, Dame, I want you to shoot less threes. That's not happening, okay? That's not what he's saying here. What he's saying here is let's penetrate and kick. I don't mind threes, but I don't want to live exclusively on them because we need better ball movement because what we did last year didn't work effectively or not. And you know what? He's right.
He said a lot of other things in that interview too, mostly about their defense, which was 23rd in the league in allowing points in defense and 25th in opposing shooting percentage. That's where they need to get better. And if you're worried about your threes and how many you're taking, how many you're making, but you're not stopping anybody on the other end, that's where your problem is. And I think the other part that I thought he said that is really important for the Blazers, not just this year, but in the going forward in their future with Jusuf Nurkic, is that he thinks there's a lot more they can do with Nurkic and a lot more they can do with him in their offense. He's a great passing big. They can get him a lot more involved in their offense. And I think that's a point of emphasis for Chauncey. So the threes, if that's what you're hunting for, as Jackie pointed out, 29th in assists, that's not going to win you a lot of games. You also have to do it on the defensive end. And the big guy there who needs to get more involved, if you don't get him involved, he's not going to be happy.
Well, I've got good news for Dame and CJ. Can we bring that graphic back up on their three-point percentage and the amount of makes and the attempts and all that stuff? Well, he said 50. Yeah. Okay. Well, they averaged 41, basically. Ooh. So, you know what? Dame and CJ,
there you go. You
to Jackie's point, you don't have to change very much of what you're going to do on offense. But I think Jackie made a great point, which is drive and kick. If you look at the teams that are most successful in the NBA and tend to win championships on offense, right? It's the teams that move the ball the most, right? It's the teams where your defense cannot set. Now, Ramona, you made an unbelievable point. Their defense, I mean, it was bad. I want to say, if I recall correctly, the Sacramento Kings had the worst defense in the history of the NBA last year. Portland, I think, finished in the top five all time as far as defense is concerned. Now, I may be wrong about that.
Last year's a bit of an outlier.
No, for sure. I get that. But it hasn't been good, and it has been trending to get worse over the years. And if there's one thing we know Chauncey's Mr. Big Shot. But those Detroit teams, Jackie, they could defend. There's no doubt about that.
Boy, could they. And there was a toughness to them, too.
And George, Chauncey came from the Clippers. Clippers led the league in three-point shooting percentage last year.
Right.
So he's not averse to taking shots.
Right.
Taking those threes, just got to make them.
Yeah, we want to make sure. The reason we did this topic was so people don't take it out of context and be like, oh, Chauncey's this old
exactly.
school guy, doesn't want to shoot threes. We wanted to make sure everyone knows that's not exactly what Chauncey's saying here. So good luck to Chauncey there. But let's shift to the Eastern Conference. Brooklyn has signed Kevin Durant to a four-year extension, as we heard and was reported previously. Nets general manager Sean Marks said Wednesday he's, quote, very confident that both James Harden and Kyrie Irving will be signed, sealed, and delivered before training camp starts. So, Ramona, the Nets have already given the bag to KD, but are you confident Kyrie and Harden will also sign their extension?
Yeah, I'm confident. I mean, initially, the impression I had was that all three of these guys were going to sign their extensions at the same time. There was going to be more of a show that all three of them were teaming up and signing extensions at the same time. But, you know, summertime, people get busy. Kyrie left Roc Nation. He's got to sort out his representation. James has been traveling around Europe. I mean, it just seems like there's been other things going on with both Kyrie yeah. and with James.
He was with the baby, I believe, in Europe. There was a big picture that circulated around the yeah. internet with that. But Jackie, how about you? How do you feel about their potentials of signing the extension with Brooklyn?
Well, Sean Marks is a very, very careful man. He's been around the league a long time, obviously done a fantastic job in Brooklyn. There's no way on earth he would even suggest this if it wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. And because what we know of Kyrie, people projecting things on behalf of him, if there was even an inkling of a doubt, this Sean Marks never would have said this. So I expect them all back. If you're James Harden, why would you even think twice about this? I would have signed it 4 weeks ago or whenever I was eligible. So yeah, this will get done.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And the reality is this. They've teamed up for a reason, so why wouldn't you sign the extension? I mean, logic just says you guys made all this happen, you want it to come together, you see it through, and you give yourself a window to potentially reach your goal, which is to win a championship or maybe even multiple championships.
There's not a huge sense of urgency, though. Both those guys are under contract for a while, so that's not a it doesn't have to get done right now. My training camp would be better, though.
Okay. Well, there was a sense.
Just remember, it wasn't Harden, Durant, and Kyrie. It was Kyrie, Durant, and DeAndre yeah. Jordan. Harden joined the party late, so he wasn't part of that original pact.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So, speaking of timeliness and contracts, well, with Dennis Schroeder, it didn't go so great. He bet on himself, and he lost. Schroeder spent one season in Los Angeles with the Lakers, turned down a four-year, $84 million offer from Los Angeles in March to instead test free agency. Now, he's headed to Boston on a one-year deal for $5.9 million, which is the taxpayer mid-level exception. So, Jackie, will Dennis Schroeder's free agency gamble serve as a cautionary tale for players moving forward?
So you would think it would, except for my experience with these players is they all have great positive felt self-talk. They all believe in themselves that most of them are saying, well, that was him, man. That's not me. So I don't really think this will change any player's mind if he really believes in himself. And it's usually the agents that are trying to guide you through this process. So Dennis Schroeder, look, this was a miscalculation. I just fired a lot of things went awry. I will say this on terms of the Celtics end of it. If you said to me the Celtics signed Schroeder to a four-year, $70 million contract, I'd say that's a huge mistake. A one-year, $5.9 million contract for a team that's super thin at the point? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? This fell right in their lap. This is maybe one of the best signings of the summer in terms of value for price.
Brad Stevens, executive of the year already. Look at that.
We'll see.
He just got the job, and he's already headed that direction. Ramona, you've got some stuff on this here.
Well, look, with the Dennis Schroeder story is he comes to the Lakers. They went out and traded for him. Remember, they trade a first-round pick and Danny Green for Dennis Schroeder. They show they wanted him. And the first thing he did in joining a championship team is say, I want to start. Wasn't a good start to get off. It wasn't a good start to his Laker tenure. I mean, the Lakers had just won a championship, so to come in and say, I want to start, when you haven't done anything in training camp or earned anything, that was a big proclamation. I think that was the start of when they realized this may not work out very well. And his best years in the NBA have been as a sixth man. That year in Oklahoma City where he finished second in the sixth man of the year voting, that's what made the Lakers want to go trade for him. They believed in him. They wanted him to do more. They gave him that latitude and said, okay, if starting's important to you, then we're going to try to make that work. But not only did they go out and give him that offer that made him a really big offer, after they traded for Russell Westbrook, my understanding is they went and circled back around to him and made sort of, and talked with him about a shorter term deal, 1 year, sort of a softer offer for more money than he got with the Celtics, and he wasn't interested in that either. So it wasn't just the $84 million contract that he extension he turned down during the year. There was a circling back with him afterwards. Ends up in Boston. Maybe that'll be a better fit, Jackie, because I think he has a bigger role there in Boston where he can rebuild his value.
That's it. It's just 1 year, right? So yeah. He has a chance to rebuild his value, and he has to be a good. He has to do everything they ask of him, so that team people begin to look at him again as a guy that can be a good teammate and a guy that can fit on any team. So this is a win-win for the Celtics and Schroeder, in my mind.
Well, listen. All I can say is this. All right, the money part. We've seen the reported stuff that he was in shock or whatnot. I don't know if he's married or not, but Mrs. Sedano would have me sleeping out on the curb, okay, if I passed on $84 million. That's all I'm going to say. So if the bosses want to offer me $84 million, I will gladly take it. Or any team, whoever,
he's
anyone want to offer me that kind of money.
A big rookie contract, so he's made some money at least.
All right. So coming up, there have been rumblings that Luka and Porzingis aren't necessarily great friends off the court, but can they work on the floor? Tim McMahon stops by to break it all down. That's coming up next. You're on the Jump. Mainstream took a hold of my soul, but I made it back, bringing it back to the roots. Also, I dash that. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano, alongside Ramona Shelburne, alongside Hall of Famer Jack McMullen, and now Tim McMahon. If we're going to talk Dallas Mavericks and Luka Doncic, we're going to talk to Tim McMahon, Bam McMahon, as we like to call him around here. All right, Tuesday, Luka Doncic signed the landmark five-year, $207 million Supermax rookie extension. The question now is, can Kristaps Porzingis and Luka Doncic work together on the floor? So, Tim, I'll start with you. What do we know about this relationship and where it's at this particular moment?
You know, it's not like these guys were at war with each other by any stretch. Just it was awkward. There was a lack of interaction on the floor, off the floor. And I thought it was interesting in Luka's press conference in Slovenia the other day. He mentioned that he wants the Mavericks to have that same kind of chemistry that the Slovenian national team had. And look, that has to start with the Luka Porzingis dynamic. And a lot of that responsibility is on Luka Doncic's shoulders. You know, you don't have to be best friends with the guy, but, you know, have some dinners, you know, play cards on the plane. And more than anything, Luka's going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to, you know, dictate who's touching it, when they're touching it. Porzingis isn't expecting to be the man, but he doesn't want to be an afterthought. He can't go a fourth quarter without touching the ball, and that is in large part up to Luka to determine.
Well, look, the Mavericks are working on their relationship with Kristaps Porzingis. Jason Kidd, he's in Latvia right now with Porzingis. And, you know, the whole contingent, Dirk and Kidd and Mark Cuban, they were all in Slovenia with Luka Doncic when he signed his contract. But they just stayed over there to work on Porzingis because you have a talented player in this league. And right now, if it's not working out, you could trade him when his value is at an all-time low. But it's better to work on it and see if you can find a way to salvage this relationship, especially with a new coach, new front office. And I think they're putting a lot of attention to doing that right now.
But honestly, guys, I think one of the problems with this pairing isn't so much their friendship. It's just that Porzingis isn't himself. Now, I don't know if he can regain his form. I know he's had some injuries, but Tim, especially when I've watched him closely, the lack of mobility, particularly defensively. 2 years ago, we were talking about this guy as like a defensive of the year candidate. This past year, teams were shooting over 60% against him in the restricted areas. So you got problems if he can't return to some kind of form on the defensive end of the floor, never mind him scoring baskets and shooting threes and all the rest of it. So they got their work cut out. I just don't know if physically he's able to be the unicorn anymore. I have my doubts.
Yeah, he needs to be the guy who was playing defense for the Knicks several years ago. I don't think there's any question about that. And look, if he can play the five, that unlocks so many things for them on both ends of the floor, but specifically on offense. So if he can handle his own defensively there, that changes the dynamic some. All right, let's move on here. Giannis is set to release a new biography titled Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an MVP. And in the book, Jason Kidd, the new head coach in Dallas, his coaching style was described as psychological warfare by a former Bucks player in the book. So, Tim, what do you expect his coaching style to be now in Dallas?
Well, one, this is a drastically different job than what he took over Milwaukee. The Milwaukee Bucks won 15 games the season before Jason Kidd took over there. That was a developmental job. It was a culture-changing job. And, you know, we can go incident by incident or situation by situation, but they jumped from 15 wins to 41 wins in his first season. I think the development he did with Giannis, with Middleton, it was Jared Dudley, who was on that team, just tweeted, that paid off, helped pave the way for them to develop into championship players. But this is not a developmental job with the Mavericks. He's taken over a playoff team. And so I think his approach will be different in Dallas than it was in Milwaukee. I also think one of the underrated members of the Mavericks staff, overlooked, I should say, Don Kalkstein, the team psychologist, has had a great relationship with Jason Kidd going back to his playing days, and he's going to be a critical part of what Jason Kidd does in Dallas moving forward.
Ramona?
Yeah, look, Jason Kidd ended up staying very close with Giannis. When Jason Kidd was fired from that job, Giannis actually called and tried to save him from being fired. So some of the stuff was hard to read. The book itself by Mirren Fate is a really good book, and really interesting about Giannis's rise and all that. But the other takeaway that you have to look at it long term is that Jason and Giannis were good on the way out, to the point where Giannis tried to save him from being fired, and they're still good. So some of the stuff is hard to read, admittedly, when you read some of the excerpts from that book. He clearly was trying to change the culture, and there was some stuff that I think is pretty borderline in terms of psychological warfare. But Jackie, you've covered the league for a long time. Some of the stories that come out of locker rooms that we hear about are, they don't always age well.
Right, and so here's the question. Did Jason Kidd learn anything from his experience in Milwaukee? Can he look back on it and say, here's what I'd like to do differently, here's what I need to do differently? And I've got to believe that the Dallas Mavericks and every other team that interviewed him were asking him these exact questions. This was, you know, a badly kept secret, the kind of stuff that went on in Milwaukee. Yeah. I will say this. Every player you talk to about Jason Kidd, they speak about him with such reverence. And that's based a lot, I believe, on the way he played the game of basketball. He's obviously a Hall of Famer, and people have great respect for the way he played the game. Now, that doesn't always translate over into coaching. We've seen a lot of great players who have not been great coaches, but he's got another shot at it. So let's see what he does with it.
Yeah, and again, to your point, Jackie, we have to see if people can learn from those experiences and grow from them. All right.
That's right.
Ramona, thank you for hanging out. We appreciate you hanging out with us today. Tim and Jackie will stick around.
Ramona.
Coming up next, we'll discuss the best players we've seen at Summer League thus far. Keep it locked here on The Jump. Coming up next, the Wizards will square off against the Hornets. Then it's Magic and Celtics, and we cap off the quadruple header with Sixers and Hawks. You can always watch all the games on the ESPN app. One app, one tap. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years, rocking the mic and putting suckers in fear. No, it's not about me. This is about Monte Ellis, actually. Sorry, my bad. Monte Ellis is attempting an NBA comeback. Ellis, who is now 35 years old, has been out of the league for over 4 years, having most recently played for the Indiana Pacers during the 16-17 season. The 12-year vet recently told Empire Sports Media that he wants another shot. So, Jackie, you think Monte can fit into a team's rotation?
Well, vintage Monta, the way he could shoot the ball would fit in with any NBA team, but 4 years, George, I think that's just a little too much time away.
Tim?
My analytics friends have something called the pain in the butt to production ratio. Monte was on the wrong end of that. Look, his career ended 4 years ago because the Pacers paid him a full year's salary to go away. The Mavericks didn't attempt to bring him back after he led the team in scoring. I think Monte can still get buckets. I wish him well, and I think he'd be a great fit in the big three.
For his sake, I hope that that's the case. I hope he can get back in, but I do think it's going to be a long road ahead, potentially, if he wants to do that. All right, let's move over to NBA Summer League. It's underway in Vegas, as we've discussed here. We've seen a lot of great action so far from the rookie class of 2021. So, Jackie, I'll start with you. Who's been your favorite thus far at Summer League?
Oh, this is easy for me. It's Jalen Suggs. I can't take my eyes off him. All the shooting, but most importantly, that two-on-one defensive play against Golden State where he turns, blocks the shot, and still retains possession. Jalen Suggs is my guy.
Okay. Tim?
Yeah, and I've got my eyes on that Rockets rookie class, you know, drafted four teenagers, three are already playing on the, on their summer league team. And Jalen Green, the number two overall pick, has obviously lived up to the hype. But the guy is really fascinating to me. They gave up two future firsts to go get him. Alperen Şengün, I might be botching the pronunciation. They call him Alpi. Kind of a banger who has a lot of finesse and a lot of flair to his game. They thought he was a mid-to-high lottery talent. Through a couple games in the summer leagues, he looks that part.
All I'm going to say is this. Bam! You nailed his name, actually, Alperen Şengün. All right? So I'm going to go with someone on the Rockets roster as well. I'm going to go with Jalen Green. I watched this kid play, and to your point earlier, Tim, I mean, he is a walking bucket. He can do everything he wants on the floor, get wherever he needs to be. It's so easy for him on the offensive end. And I loved a interview he did in one of the post games with Cassidy Hubbard where he talked about that chip on his shoulder, how he feels he should have been the number one pick in the draft, and that stuff continues to drive him and makes him want to be the guy to strive to be the best guy in this particular class. So I love everything I've seen from him. And look, no disrespect to Cade Cunningham. Cade Cunningham has been fantastic as well, but he has just stuck out. Green has just stuck out to me. It has been fun. There's no doubt, whether it's Jalen Suggs, whether it's Şengün, whether it's Jalen Green, there are a lot of good young players. Davion Mitchell, by the way, Sacramento. That kid, how about playing defense? Jackie, when was the last time you saw someone play defense in summer league like that kid? Come on.
Well, but did you see the Suggs play? Because that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I know.
You
I'm
get
with
my
you,
heart
so.
If you play
right,
defense.
We are
that's
done
always,
here.
Always the case.
Thank you to Ramona Shelburne for joining us earlier. Thanks to Tim McMahon and, of course, the Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen. I'm George Sedano. That's it for today. Thanks for watching, and we will catch you mañana. See ya.